All right, everyone, welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. I am joined by my buddy from NFL.com, Graham Barfield. He was on the show last offseason. We play in a couple fantasy leagues together. And, just really wanted to have Graham on the show to talk about his championship dynasty team in a league that we are in together and kind of just the dynasty landscape together. Graham, how's the offseason treating you thus far, my friend?
It's good, man. Thanks for having me on. Off-season's always a beautiful time. After like 6-7 months of grinding your face off, you get a little bit of reprieve, especially in January. Got some good football on. Super Bowl's coming up. It's always a good time this time of year.
You know, I mean, you know what actually the biggest difference has been for me is from after week 16, not having to do waivers is like that first Tuesday night and that first Wednesday night where you don't have to do waivers, it feels like you are a free person.
Absolutely. I joke around every year, like I would seriously hire somebody, like pay them like a decent amount per hour to just do waivers for my various season-long teams. Because you're right. I mean, like I don't know about you, but after like 6-7 weeks of doing waivers for a bunch of different leagues, it definitely gets a little monotonous.
And especially teams where you're like, okay, maybe like this team is not very good and maybe it'll make the playoffs, but it's, you know, like this year, if you had teams without Christian McCaffrey, without Michael Thomas and without Lamar Jackson, and you were still grinding waivers, you had to know, like, this is a little bit of a futile exercise, basically.
Exactly. Like those fringe teams that like are barely above 500 and you're just trying to get in the playoffs, but you know, you're going to get kicked, you know, get your butt kicked in the playoffs. Yeah.
So the first thing that I wanted to talk about is this championship team that you have in the DFB Invitational, where you beat out Matthew Berry in the final by, I think it was 0.5 draft or 0.5 PPR points due to a massive effort from Ryan Fitzpatrick. How do you feel about the state of this team and where do you go with a championship roster? You know, kind of how do you start thinking about things moving forward in Dynasty when you have a championship roster?
Sure. So a little bit of backstory with Berry. Like I was the number one seed in the playoffs. He was the number two seed. He was top in the league in points scored. He beat me twice during the regular season. I was 0-2 against him. So we met up for a third and final battle in the championship game. And I was down 51 points, 51 going into Monday Night Football. I had Davante Adams and Aaron Jones left. And they combined to get 52. That Aaron Jones long, like 57-yard touchdown or whatever it was, kind of got me there. Pretty wild win. This team, I have literally zero rookie picks in 2020 or 2021. I either during the startup draft or over the last like year that we've been playing, traded them all away for various pieces. And that's typically how I approach most dynasty leagues. I want to like build around receivers. I want to build around like established veterans. And I think this team has a really good mix of that. But you know, moving forward this coming year, I'm already like trying to find ways to get into this rookie class, because I know you've probably done more work than me at this point, but this 2020 rookie class is really, really fun. And
It's not quite as good as, like at the beginning of the year, we were like, oh, well, this is going to be the best rookie class ever. And a couple things happened. One, you and I were just talking right before the show. Chuba and Etienne going back to school is not great. It kind of leaves this class with only one, well, two. So J.K. Dobbins and Jonathan Taylor as the two elite running backs. Tua getting injured also, because this league that we are playing in, this is a super flex league. So you don't have to start two quarterbacks, but obviously you want to. So Tua getting injured changes the complexion of it a little bit as well. And also, you know, just kind of like good seasons from Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb, but neither of them went like full Calvin Ridley their final season in college, basically. So it's all still very good, but it's not like the best rookie class ever.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's pretty top heavy at the top, especially at running back. It sort of seems like this is not a super deep running back class. I haven't, like I said, I haven't really dug super deep into it. But yeah, man, this league is a lot of fun. I played Jeff Collins-Hefe in the second round. He had a really good team. Your team included, there's like four or five just like I think pretty strong teams that have very good like 1 to 2 year windows here. And you, we were talking before the show, I mean, you're sitting on 3 2020 rookie picks, and I think you said they're all in the top eight.
No. So my, because I lost in the semifinal, so I am 10.
Okay. But, so you got three top tens.
Yeah. I feel pretty good. So just so like the starting lineup of my team is Dak Prescott. And then so my team doesn't really have a second quarterback. It's Mitch Trubisky or Ben Roethlisberger. So I'm probably going to be in the market for a quarterback. And then Chubb, Ezekiel Elliott, Kenny Galladay, Chris Godwin, Austin Hooper. It's a tight end premium league as well. And then your team is wild with the skill position players. So you have Russell Wilson as your primary quarterback. You have Phillip Rivers and Ryan Fitzpatrick as your rotational guys. You have Mark Ingram, Aaron Jones, Phillip Lindsay as your, you know, primary running backs. Then your wide receivers, you have both Davante Adams, Alshon Jeffrey, Tyler Lockett, and Tyreek Hill. Like your team is, you have a lot of you know, like top 25 dynasty assets on that roster.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I want to build my teams. It's like I want to build them through the skill positions, and especially at wide receiver, just because, you know, with receivers, they typically, their careers typically just last longer. And those, their primes typically last longer too. Like running back primes are usually only like 3 to 4 years, whereas a top end receiver is like, you know, Davante Adams is a great example. He's going to have a prime of, you know, maybe 6 to 7 years. It's almost double what a normal running back is. And this league is a lot of fun because not only is it two quarterback league, but it's also tight end premium. So you get 1.5 PPR points for every reception a tight end has. And it kind of has made for a lot of really interesting roster construction, because Matthew Berry went all in on tight ends.
On the tight ends.
I mean, he is just completely loaded. He traded for Travis Kelce from CJ, but he also drafted like Zach Ertz and Darren Waller. And I think Darren Waller was pretty clearly the most valuable pick of our startup draft. I mean, he got Waller just insanely late.
I believe it was Pat Thorman. Whoever has Lamar Jackson got him in the eighth round as like the 21st quarterback selected, which is I was talking with Rich Rebar the other day, and he pointed out to me that Mitch Trubisky went ahead of Lamar Jackson in our startup draft.
Yeah, I think you and I were talking about that too.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, everyone missed on Lamar in this league, which is kind of crazy considering, I mean, it was filled with
a lot of
people. Yeah, we were filled with people that all really liked him or were pretty high on him in season long. And yeah, we just screwed up the startup draft. I will say we did the startup draft in like early February last year. So that was kind of truly before all the hype had built, and they had, you know, the Ravens had just lost to the Chargers. So maybe there was a little bit of recency bias in there.
And I mean, so another thing that I actually think makes your strategy in this league really interesting is that we will always have the rookie draft scheduled after the combine, but before the NFL draft. And that does make the rookie picks way less valuable, because there are a couple of examples from our league from the rookie draft last year. I think that Hakeem Butler went 105 in our draft last year. If I'm remembering that correctly, Hakeem Butler went as a first round pick and then was a fourth round pick in the NFL draft. And Alexander Mattison went undrafted, so he was just available on FAB. And Mecole Hardman went to Danny Kelly in the third or fourth round of the rookie draft. So, like, just the hit rates on those picks, I mean, they're already bad, and they're going to be, like, cut in half.
Exactly. I mean, that's why, like I said, with most dynasty teams, I'm looking to build around, you know, young, proven production with young players or veterans. And with rookie picks in particular, you mentioned, I mean, they have a really low hit rate just in general, like even if we know which teams they're going to land on. But if you're drafting in like February or March before the draft, I mean, that hit rate goes from like, I don't even know, like 50 to 55% with the top six, top eight pick to, I think, lower, like maybe even 40%. And to me, if you're trying to win and win now and win always, I'm not trying to take those magical mystery box picks, especially when we don't know which teams these guys are going to be on.
Yeah, so I think in our league, I think that some of the examples of like the only sure thing in two quarterback leagues is going to be Joe Burrow, and I think that he will go. Like I would imagine, whoever has the number one pick in our league is going to select him first overall. Like I just think that that's just kind of the way things go in two quarterback formats, and with you know, just the track record of quarterbacks that go number one overall, like they're going to get to start at least all of their rookie contract.
No doubt. Where do you think Tua is going to go just in most rookie drafts, like non-2 QB leagues?
So I think in just standard, 12-team PPR leagues, I bet that he goes in the first four picks of the second round. So I think that all of these wide receivers are going to go. Yeah. I think Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins, those guys are going to go. An interesting thing about this class is there are like no good tight ends. So I don't think that, well, no tight ends that profile right now to be, you know, top 50 picks or whatever. Whereas last year we had two go in the first round. So that might push Burrow and Tua up a little bit. Also, Justin Herbert is making like big waves at the Senior Bowl. All the coaches, they can't shut up about Justin Herbert and how good he's playing. And so I think there's a scenario where Tua ends up being the third quarterback drafted. And that, like, if you're talking about the third quarterback drafted, you're talking about like a third round rookie dynasty pick.
Yeah. It's definitely possible. Justin Herbert gaining draft stock was so inevitable. It was so inevitable. I think he'll probably be a top 20 pick in the NFL draft once we get.
Yeah. I mean, he is going to be Drew Lock, Geno Smith. Yep. It happens every single year, and it always happens to guys who play exactly like Justin Herbert. Like, he's going to look amazing in all of the practices. Like, he's going to look incredible and all, because when you're not faced against live defense, like guys who've been quarterbacks since they were, I don't know, Herbert's probably been a quarterback since he was 10. Like, he's just going to be able to destroy these practice squad defenses.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. All right. So, this is like the core question of Dynasty, really, is how do you determine sell windows for guys? And not that this is not going to surprise anyone listening to this, but I'm always comfortable selling a year too early. And, you know, there are times where that looks good. So an example of this is I sold David Johnson in two Dynasty leagues last year for like very high returns. That looked really good. I also sold Travis Kelce in a couple Dynasty leagues last year. That looks really bad. Like, it looks like he's going to be dominant until he's like 34 because of the offense that he plays in. So how do you kind of start thinking about selling windows?
Sure. So I am always willing to sell running backs early. I will admit that I definitely don't do this often enough on my teams, but running backs, it's so obvious. The attrition is just insane at the position, especially for high-end producers. I mean, we're looking at a window here for Zeke, Melvin Gordon, Lev Bell. All of these guys are still fairly elite fantasy running backs, but they're all nearing a window where their production is really going to start dropping off. I don't know if it's going to be this year or the following year, but it's coming soon. I'm way more willing to sell early on running backs just because of, you know, the age curve, the age-based production. Look, I always want to try to build around receivers with dynasty teams. I think no matter if you're in a 2QB league or a tight end premium league, your goal really should be to have at least two pretty elite fantasy receivers on your team with relatively young receivers. So my top three guys in this DFB league are Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, and Tyler Lockett. I traded for Tyler Lockett. But all of them are, 26, 27 years old.
Am I right at the time that everyone thought you got the bad end of that trade? I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember people thinking you got the bad end of that one.
Of the Lockett deal?
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe I'm misremembering.
So I traded pretty much all of my 2021 picks for Lockett.
Yeah.
I traded 1, 2, and 3. And look, I mean, Tyler Lockett
that sounds about right to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to see any of those returns on those rookie picks for at least a year and a half. Tyler Lockett is still 27 years old. He's been he was a top 10, top 12 fantasy receiver this year. I think DK, it'll be interesting to see how much DK cuts into Lockett's production, but I think Wilson can clearly support
They might fire Brian Schottenheimer, and then all of a sudden Lockett's just going to be getting like like 12 targets a game and just be like blowing things up,
which is ironically what the Seahawks should be doing all along. But I mean,
right,
there's enough volume, even if they continue on their same run heavy pace, for Metcalf and Lockett to both get like 110 targets next year. And if they both get 110 targets, they're both going to destroy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I like, so I think that if you're going to leverage picks, the way I think about them is it's like very similar to how you think about them, which is you certainly should not, I think, trade like a whole rookie draft's worth of picks for Ezekiel Elliott, Derrick Henry, Christian McCaffrey, because like literally like one false step and those guys' careers are, you know, changed forever. And it might even be something as simple as, you know, what happened to Nick Chubb, who is on my roster this year, which is they just signed a really good backup running back to take away passing downs from him. And that changed his fantasy value. You know, he almost led the league in rushing. But if I tried to sell Nick Chubb right now, I mean, what do you like? I could probably get one rookie first for him, but I bet I couldn't get Kyler Murray for him, basically, who's like really valuable in two quarterback leagues. And that just shows how fickle the value of running backs are.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think if you draft just with depth in mind, like if you're just drafting, you start your dynasty startup draft with, you just want to have the deepest running back and receiver spots to begin with, you're going to likely be in a good position. And that's typically how I want to build my teams, is through depth. I also feel like I got really lucky in our startup draft, because I mean, I don't know if it was just the way the board fell to me or whatever it was, but like I had some really nice picks in the mid rounds. Like I got Mark Andrews really late. I messed up and drafted Eric Ebron in like the 8th or 9th round, which was my worst pick, but I made up for it and got Mark Andrews really late in this draft. I got John Brown in like the 15th or 16th round, and he was huge for me because Alshon Jeffrey and Marvin Jones both got hurt in the middle of the year. You know, I think if you draft for depth and you've got some extra guys on your roster and you're, you know, number 6, number 7 receivers, John Brown, and you can, you know, potentially flip them for even like a mid round pick, a rookie pick, I'm all about that.
Something that people do in dynasty drafts, they did that in this draft and every other league I'm in, is once it gets to like round 11, 12, 13, 14, the people stop taking safe picks. Like they just stop taking veteran guys who like aren't going to be cut, and they start taking Teddy Bridgewater, Blake Jarwin, like guys with like theoretical upside. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you want to do a dynasty startup draft this year, just know like, oh, you're going to be able to get Breshad Perriman. You're going to be able to get Cole Beasley. You're going to be able to get Frank Gore. Like, and I know it just like, oh, why do I want to own those guys? Well, then all of a sudden, like, oh, Chris Godwin got injured, and I don't have an active player who can start for him. Like, having those guys is valuable in dynasty formats.
No doubt. And Frank Gore is not going to ever be a league winner, but that's such a good point about like just having a little bit of that extra depth. Because so much variance happens. I mean, especially in the leagues that you and I play in Dynasty, like the waiver wire is completely barren every single week. It's a joke.
Yeah, I mean like on my roster right now, I have Wes Hill because he was going to play for a week.
Yeah. I mean, I've got some just absolute roster trash on my team too. I've got like Rashard Higgins and some other guys I need to get rid of. But that's kind of the point, is like you want to make these leagues, you know, fairly difficult. And when that happens, you know, the waiver wire is just absolutely dead every single week.
I mean, something that I really like about these formats is just like having to get so deep into like things. Like I don't want to play in dynasty leagues that don't have at least one guy who's rostered, who's either not on an NFL roster or just straight up on like a practice squad.
Yeah. I've got Emmanuel Hall. So that's my guy. I mean, he went undrafted last year. I liked him a lot coming out, and he's just bounced around. He's sitting on the Redskins practice squad now.
Yeah, there was actually a guy this year in this league that I wanted to add who was not in MFL's system. It was Tyrone Swopes, the practice squad tight end for the Seattle Seahawks. And I had to literally message customer service and be like, hey, can you guys get him on the Seahawks roster so I can add him? And like that, those are if you guys are listening to this and you don't play in leagues that are that deep, like honestly, it's so fun to play in leagues where you have to know that stuff. Like it's very fun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we, you know, you and I are just complete, you know, degenerates. I mean, we're already going to be following and knowing these guys and knowing these rosters, you know, backwards and forwards, and now being able to put, you know, a little skin in the game on these guys and, you know, have somebody like Jacob Hollister who just randomly pops off the practice squad or whatever. It's a lot of fun.
Well, just hitting on one of those guys over the course of a season, just finding one guy who went from having zero fantasy value at all, and then they turn into even a, you know, tight end 12, wide receiver 33, running back 28. Like literally hitting on one of those guys can change your season. And even further, like, if you had in a dynasty league picked up Damian Williams last year, who I'm sure was not on many people's rosters, like, that was a fortune changer. Like, those guy, that guy gained so much dynasty value over the course of the offseason. He became like a brand new player.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Damian Williams is a perfect example of that. You're a Chiefs fan, right?
I grew up being a Cowboys fan, but I lived in Kansas City for a long time. So I'm like a little bit of both.
Okay. They're not going to draft a running back early, are they?
Well, actually, I thought they were going to draft Travis Etienne. That's why so interested in him because I thought third round, kind of like where David Montgomery and Devin Singletary went last year. I thought that was a really good spot for them to target. Now, I think that the running backs available are going to get pushed up the board a little bit. I do not think they will. I think that they will probably run it back with Darryl Darwin and Damian again for another year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I was actually texting a buddy a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I want Etienne on the Chiefs so badly. Like, how do we make this happen? And of course, he goes back to school.
I mean, he would just have been a very good fit there because he doesn't really he's not the type of running back where you look at him and you're like, okay, well, he's useless if we don't give him 22 carries a game, you know, good pass blocker and all that stuff. So I thought that was just a really good spot, and you know, it didn't end up happening. So I guess where we all started talking about this is when to sell guys. So I'm wondering if you are just kind of looking around the league, and do you think there are any guys that you view as a sell that are not like consensus sell guys?
Sure. I think Zeke is a pretty good example right now. He obviously just got paid coming off four just elite running back seasons, top five, top six in four straight years. He's been the top of the league in rushing yards per game in every single year. But that window's coming. I don't think it's going to come in 2020. I think we'll get one more year of Zeke being an elite fantasy running back. But man, those carries are going to start adding up. And I don't know how Mike McCarthy and the rest of the Cowboys feel, but Tony Pollard, to me, just looked like a total game changer when he got touches last year. And I think Dallas would be very silly to not get Pollard more involved. And I'm not saying Zeke's not going to be a bell cow anymore, but there is a legitimately great running back behind him on the depth chart. And if Mike McCarthy even gets him slightly more involved, and he should get him more involved in the passing game 100%, that's going to eat into Zeke's production. I think Zeke is a pretty strong sell for me right now. And if you can still get like 95 to 100% of his value, either in rookie picks or for a receiver that you're interested in, I would definitely, consider pulling the trigger on that.
What do you think about the Mike McCarthy hire? What I call myself is a self-hating Dallas Cowboys fan. So okay. I am very interested in just like, what is Mike McCarthy even going to do? And I think it is a very good sign that that he kept Kellen Moore on.
Yeah, I that's exactly where I was going to go with it. Is if McCarthy was going to call plays and design the offense all on his own, I'd be pretty scared. But the fact that they're keeping Kellen Moore around, they're going to keep some of the terminology that Dak and Cooper and all these guys are used to, that's very encouraging to me. I guess McCarthy kind of wants to be a CEO type, and maybe that's what Jerry's looking for at this point, is just somebody who can kind of manage and delegate. And I think McCarthy can do that. And I don't know what happened with the Cowboys at the beginning of the year. I don't know when Kellen Moore stopped calling plays and when Jason Garrett really started getting involved in the game plan. But, for the first three, four games of the year, the Cowboys were unstoppable on offense. I mean, they used a ton of play action. They were throwing first, not running first. And I thought Kellen Moore had some really nice ideas. And I'm interested to see if McCarthy kind of gives him some more free reign.
Yeah, that is what I'm most interested in as well. Because if it's true that he just wants to be a CEO type, I mean, that is what they lacked, right? They needed someone to keep the team organized. They needed someone to keep them from taking stupid penalties and to be ready. And they just did not have that. They did not have that last year. So I'm pretty hyped up about that. So three guys that I really am wanting to trade for this offseason in all kinds of dynasty formats: Noah Fant, Daryl Henderson, and Michael Gallup. First, I mean, do you agree, disagree with any of those three?
Oh man, I am so in on Gallup and Fant. Fant in particular, I loved him
He's the real deal.
Oh, he is the real deal. I had him, I think, top six, top five in my dynasty rankings coming out. Produced as a rookie. I mean, literally any production from a rookie tight end is great, but Fant had some monster games and he is just a total freak. I'm 100% with you on Fant, especially if the Broncos don't really invest too heavily at the second receiver spot, because if it's just Sutton and Fant next year, that's a really nice setup for fantasy.
Yeah, it is. It is really nice. So the thinking behind Daryl Henderson, who obviously had just this horrible rookie year, is I just took a look at all running backs drafted in between picks 35 and pick 80 from the year 2000 to the year 2015. And over 33% of them got 1,000 carries or more in their career. And only, I think, 8 of them, like, legit busted to the point that they were, like, never usable at all in fantasy. And a couple of them are names that people will remember, like Monty Ball or Kenny Irons, who played for Auburn. A lot of people remember him because he was in the national championship. But overall, I would say I don't really think it was his fault that the Rams were bad on offense last year, and they might be able to look at him as like a more creative solution to some of their offensive troubles.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, Gurley's got another year of this arthritic knee problem, and he looked just, I mean, the explosiveness, especially his lateral explosiveness this past year, Gurley was just pretty total. I mean, he's pretty much total dust trying to move laterally. I guess my issue is, like, I love Darrell Henderson coming out. He blew up in my yards created process, and he just looked like a total freak and basically did not get on the field at all. I mean, we saw him a little bit in the beginning of the year, and then he pretty much petered away. I mean, even with Malcolm Brown getting hurt late in the year, Henderson basically barely played, which is pretty frustrating. I do wonder, though, if McVay and the Rams just, like, have this, like, sunk cost into Gurley, because they just paid him all that money and he is still relatively young. But yeah, I'm with you on Henderson. He's going to be really interesting to try to value for season long, because you would think the Rams are likely not going to add any pieces to their backfield this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they're going to draft another running back. I don't think that they'll invest in that position particularly heavily. So I agree. Are there any guys you find yourself, you know, like, okay, I want to try and get them on more of my dynasty teams this offseason?
Yeah, one is Austin Eckler. Went through Dynasty League Football's ADP this morning, and I was shocked to see that he's, like, outside of the top 45 picks, which is just insane to me. I mean, not only was Eckler the RB4 this past year, I think it's pretty clear that the Chargers are going to move on from Melvin Gordon. If they bring back Austin Eckler and it's just Eckler in that backfield, like, he is going to have some monster seasons coming up. Eckler is, I think, the big question coming into this year with him was, can he handle the load? Like, can he handle, you know, 12, 15, 16 carries per game? And that's pretty clear that he checked that box with Melvin Gordon out the first 4 weeks of the season. And he has proven that he is, like, one of the best, if not the best, receiving running back in the NFL, not named Christian McCaffrey. And I just think even if he moves on from the Chargers and somebody pays him a bunch of money to kind of be a featured guy, he is extremely undervalued in the market. One guy I have on a bunch of teams that I drafted in, like, the second, third round, but didn't get him in our league, in the DFB league, is Terry McLaurin. I want Terry McLaurin on all of my dynasty teams. Just an elite producer in the third round. I pulled this morning and tweeted it out, but over the last 30 years, Terry McLaurin's 919 receiving yards is the fourth most for any rookie receiver draft in the third round or later. And this has there's an elite group of receivers in this crop, like T.Y. Hilton, Cooper Kupp, all went for over 860 yards. Marcus Colston, Keenan Allen went over 1,000 yards. McLaurin just looks like, not only based on his age-based production, but just the way the NFL is trending with these kind of smaller, shifty, fast guys that can get moved all over the field, especially in the slot, and try, you know, burn interior defenders. I think McLaurin is a very, very strong buy in dynasty leagues. The only issue is, and I find myself with this issue, is, like, I drafted him in the second or third round, and that owner who you know, basically got gold in the second or third round is not going to be super willing to trade McLaurin unless it's for a haul, but I think he's worth it.
So I have an official petition, and I would like for Ohio State, for the head coaches and the wide receiver coaches, to tell me which of the players are good in which the players are bad, because I have missed on, I think, legitimately every Ohio State wide receiver ever. Like, literally, I do not think I have ever gotten one right. Michael Thomas, I guess I thought that Devin Smith was bad, but I think my default with Ohio State wide receivers is just to underrate them, because none of them ever get above like 25% market share of the team stuff.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and it's only because they spread the ball out. But Davis, Curtis Samuel is good, and he's going to break out in 2020. He is good.
I mean, Curtis Samuel's like a very useful NFL player, but he's not. I mean, he's not better than DJ Moore, right? Like,
of course not,
right?
Yeah, yeah. That blew my mind. A lot of people were. I mean, I'm a huge Curtis Samuel fan, but I mean, I DJ Moore is just, he's just on a total another level. But I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, DJ Moore is. Like, DJ Moore is the next guy to be DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, AJ Green, and yeah. Curtis Samuel's like going to be the next. Like, there's not really a great comp for him because his role is like new in the NFL now, but I would say like fantasy value very similar to like DeSean Jackson.
Yeah. If Cam's back healthy and can connect on a few deep balls, like, Curtis Samuel's going to have a big year, because Kyle Allen just was so inept at, I mean, he couldn't do anything besides checking the ball down to Christian McCaffrey and throwing slants to DJ Moore. I mean, anything they tried to get vertically down the field to Samuel just was extremely low probability that was going to be caught, because Allen was just so bad. I'm interested. I mean, Curtis Samuel's only 23 years old, man. Like, he's right on the cusp of being another strong buy too, just because he's coming off such a bad, relatively bad season. But he could have a monster year.
I mean, certainly I think it's harder for a player like Curtis Samuel to do well with a quarterback like Kyle Allen. Like, DJ Moore can just run 8-yard slants and like he'll just catch those forever, and there's nothing the defense can do, and it's very hard for Kyle Allen to like not make that throw. It's like a little bit harder for Curtis Samuel because he doesn't have that same skill set. But I mean, yeah, it's just like Curtis Samuel, he'll actually probably be a value now, right? Like, he'll probably be, I mean, I don't even know if he would be in the top 100 of ADP, like in 2020. I would think no.
Yeah, I don't think he will be either. I think Samuel's, you know, we're talking about guys that you want to buy low on or trade for. I think Samuel would probably be my third, honestly. It's just because he's super young. Panthers are going to figure out their quarterback position. It's going to be better than Kyle Allen this coming year. And I mean, a 24-year-old receiver who has the skill set of Samuel, and we're just waiting for the production, always, especially after a bad year. I love being contrarian, buying guys after, you know, supposed bad years, you know, either because of bad, you know, quarterback play or, you know, just poor play calling. I love buying post-type sleepers and just sitting on them to see what they can do, especially when the market, you know, everyone was high on Curtis Samuel this past year.
Where do you think Mecole Hardman is going to go in redraft in 2020?
Oh man, I love Mecole. He's going to be so good. What are they going to do with Sammy Watkins? I mean, for whatever reason, the Chiefs, I think Andy Reid is like one of the smartest head coaches ever. And
yeah,
no doubt one of the best offensive minds ever. The fact that he has not given Mecole Hardman like not a full-time role, but more of a role, like DeMarcus Robinson and Sammy Watkins have both routinely played over Mecole, is a little bit concerning. I definitely trust Reed's instincts and intuition there more than my own. But at the same time, like if Watkins and or Robinson are not on the team anymore next year, I think Mecole is going to be like a sixth or seventh round pick, maybe even in the fifth round, because he is so freaky.
Yeah. I mean, I want him to be a full-time player, and the Sammy Watkins ship, I'd really appreciate not losing money on him next year. So like, it would be great for me if he, you know, if he went back to Buffalo or, you know, maybe Jacksonville pays him some money or something. Like I just need him to not be with an elite quarterback next year. Cause if he is, I will go broke trying to chase him again.
How perfect is it that in the year of 2020, Sammy Watkins starts his season with nearly 200 yards and 3 touchdowns and then ends the divisional round with just a blow up performance of like 7-115 and a touchdown. It's just perfect Sammy Watkins.
He's definitely going to have like a very terrible game in the Super Bowl, like 2 drops, going to miss a block. Like it's going to be painful to watch him. I know.
It's inevitable.
All right, Graham. Great conversation about football. Tell people what you guys have going on over at NFL.com right now.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're in off-season mode. Marcus, Grant, Michael Fabiano, and I, we're still doing NFL, the podcast 2 times a week. You can check that out wherever you listen to podcasts. And yeah, I'm going to be doing some yards created stuff coming up very soon with this rookie class coming out. I'm very excited about it. You know, I think, you know, J.K. Dobbins and the top end of the class is really fun. But then there's some kind of like, you know, the second tier guys like Cam Akers and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are really fun. Really excited to get into this this rookie class and get going on yards created here soon too.
All right. Everyone, make sure to follow Graham on Twitter and go check out his stuff at NFL.com. And we will for sure have him back on a little bit closer to the draft and have him talk about some of what he found with his yards created stuff. Until next time, we will be back.